This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. I love Active Skin Repair. So I've got the boy who is a lifeguard, loves being outside, but is pretty pale. And even though I'm on his case about the sunscreen, he gets sunburns. Active Skin Repair is super helpful when that happens. My husband is a total worker guy, tinker around in the shop, getting cuts and scrapes all the time. We literally use this Active Skin Repair, I mean, just all the time. It's always in use at our house. And it's not just for cuts and scrapes and burns. It also can be used for rashes and other types of skin damage. It's also safe and non-toxic, making it suitable for use on all skin types, all parts of the body, even on rosacea, eczema, and acne-prone skin. Seriously, all the things. I'm stoked about this sponsor. You can go to www.activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order when you use the code JOYFUL. So again, go to www.activeskinrepair.com and use the code JOYFUL for 20% off your order. Hey, welcome to the Joyful Courage Podcast, a place for inspiration and transformation as we try and keep it together while parenting our tweens and teens. This is real work, people. And when we can focus on our own growth and nurturing the connection with our kids, we can move through the turbulence in a way that allows for relationships to remain intact. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I am your fearless host. I'm a positive discipline trainer, space holder coach, and the adolescent lead at Sproutable. I am also the mama to a 20-year-old daughter and 17-year-old son, walking right beside you on this path of raising our kids with positive discipline and conscious parenting. This show is meant to be a resource to you, and I work really hard to keep it real, transparent, and authentic so that you feel seen and supported. Today is an interview, and I have no doubt that what you hear will be useful to you. Please don't forget, sharing truly is caring. If you love today's show, please pass the link around, snap a screenshot, post it on your socials, or text it to your friends. Together, we can make an even bigger impact on families all around the globe. I'm so glad that you're here. Enjoy the show. Hi, listeners. Welcome back to the podcast. My guest today is someone who is a friend to the Joyful Courage Pod, D'Antoine DJ Johnson. DJ is a husband, father, author, mentor, coach, counselor, and sports statistician. He grew up in the Indiana foster care system, and yet despite that has gone on to lead a successful and fulfilling life. Before spending 9 years in the foster care system, DJ suffered child abuse, domestic abuse, and emotional trauma. At one point, he wanted to end his life, but he realized that he was on this earth for a purpose. DJ fulfills that purpose by using his experiences not only to help establish relationships with the students he serves, but he helps parents better connect with their teenagers. We're so grateful that he does. DJ specializes in helping parents bridge the communication gap between them and their child to ensure that their child has room to be their best versions of themselves. And you might recognize his name because he was featured in episode 293 of the Joyful Courage Podcast. I'm so glad to have him back. Welcome. Hi.
Hello there.
Yay. I'm so glad to have you come on again and to connect, yeah, around the work that we both love.
I know. It's so funny because I was messaging you recently, not even like to petition to come back, but just genuinely like into a couple of your latest episodes. And I'm like, and it's crazy for me, like when I know people that have, like there's certain friends that I have that have podcasts, and when I listen to them and I hear something amazing, I messaged him immediately, like, oh my gosh, this, right? And you're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh yeah, I'm
listening to your
podcast.
Listen, keep doing that, because those of us that are behind the mic and putting stuff out there, you know, we don't know. We just throw it out there. And so anytime anybody comes back and was like, yes, I totally resonated with that, especially a peer and a colleague and a friend, like it means so much that you even listened and let alone appreciated what I had to say. So
yes,
thanks for
of
that.
Course. So yeah. So then you were like, oh my gosh, why don't you come back? And I'm like,
come back.
Yeah, let's do it.
yes. And I'm so excited about what we're going to dig into. But before we get there, can you let the listeners know a little bit about the work that you do with teenagers, how you show up in the world with and for teens and their families?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was thinking when you were reading my bio, the last part about being a sports statistician, and I'm like, it seems so irrelevant to like this parenting world and space. And I was like, should I take it out? And I'm like, well, maybe there's a dad out there who's like, his ears perks up when he hears the sports side, and then I can reel him in and talk to him in that way. But anyway, speaking of sports, I think the last time I was on your podcast, I was still working at Fox full time. Mm-hmm. I am no longer working there. I am full time into my business now, and that is working with students and parents and families. And so what I do is 3 days a week, I go to high school campuses, two of them, and I meet with and counsel students, high school students, 9th through 12th grade. And they always ask me, like, what type of student do you see? And I'm like, well, my target student is the student that typically wouldn't come to counseling, that typically wouldn't be open to therapy or anything like that. And so I work with those types of students and all types, really, but those are kind of like my avatar student. And so that's the day part. And then we have currently about 5-6 parenting workshop series going on right now. And so I do 3 of them, I believe. And then I have a colleague that does 2 more. And so, yeah, we are busy trying to impact and connect with this community that we inhabit. So that's what I do.
Well, I so appreciate your role in the schools. I have so many clients whose kids are clearly, you know, struggling, having a hard time, really insular, and won't go see anyone.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that I'm imagining that you're really attractive to the kids that you pull in, to not only your background, but you're young and seemingly cool and hip, and you're not some stuffy, middle-aged, you know, white guy or white lady who's like, well, let me tell you what you're doing wrong. Like, I love that you're on campus and that you have a presence, and I'm sure that the kids resonate so much with connecting with you and find that open door really appealing. So thank you for your work.
Thank you. And it's a blessing, just because I always make it a point to ask students, like, have you had counseling before? Have you received therapy before? And a good portion of them haven't. And so it's pretty cool for their first experience to be with me, a person who's like, hey, come into this space. You're safe here. I want to listen to you and hear you and be in this space with you as much as possible. And there are some that are like, I had therapy before, but I didn't like it. And so they didn't have a bad experience. And so I get the opportunity to try to repair that relationship with therapy, with counseling.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have a lot of fun in the schools. I'm trying very hard not to fill my schedule completely. Right now I'm at 3 days, and there's been a temptation to do more, but I like it where it is.
I mean, there's no shortage of demand, I'm sure, for your time.
No doubt.
For sure. Okay. Well, last time you were on, we explored what you call new school parenting versus old school parenting. And to me, that basically is moving from that punitive kind of more traditional model into a more relationship-centered model. So we're going to carry on in that theme. And dig into something that I think is such a potent word for parents, especially parents of teenagers, which is respect, specifically mutual respect. And, you know, there's definitely an old school mindset around respect and a new school model of this concept. What would you say are the differences there?
I don't know why I had the urge when you were about to say respect to sing the R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Find out what it means to me.
Yeah, they're all about to find out what it means to us. So you're welcome, listeners.
No, but like, The old school motto of respect says, I'm the adult. I am the person in charge of this home. You will respect me no matter what. And it made sense in the moment. And then I think as I got older, personally, and then as I kind of observe teenagers and what tends to be the rift between teenagers and parents, is that, okay, you are demanding that I respect you, but you're flawed and you make mistakes and you don't reciprocate that respect back to me. And so it's not making sense for me to respect you, but you not give it back to me. And I don't know what it looks like. That was kind of how I view the old school way. It's like, respect me at all costs, no matter what I'm doing, even if I'm cursing you out or even if I'm hitting you, like, respect me. And it's like,
right,
okay. But when I go out into the outside world, it doesn't make sense, because am I just going to expect all adults to hit me when I'm not respecting them, or or yell at me, or whatever it might be? And so the new school way of looking at respect is like kind of throwing out that old hierarchical, outdated way of looking at respect. Yeah. And just saying, how can I show up as respect and model respect and show my students what that looks like, my kid, what that looks like, so that they can ultimately give that respect that I've been trying to force them to give me. And the perfect thing that happened to me and personally to really change my mindset around respect is when I first started working with students, high school students in group settings. And I've been working with students since 2009 in an after school setting, younger kiddos, and it just kind of progressed up until where I am today. And I want to say around 2014 is when I first started working with my most challenging students in the high school setting. And I went into the space like, I'm the adult, you're going to respect me, like just kind of demanding that, but not really showing what that looks like. And then those kids, those students quickly let me know, like, this is not how this is going to go. And I quickly had to shift and say, okay, let me hear y'all out. What is it that y'all need from me? And honestly, what it came down to was me modeling and showing them what that respect looks like. Yeah. And now, even if I have a student that comes into a space and they're disrespectful, I can keep my respectful nature about myself. And now I can approach that conversation like, hey, what's going on? Like,
right,
you're disrespecting me. I'm not giving you that energy. Is everything okay? Like, I'm curious of what's happening here, as opposed to like reacting, you know, getting upset by it. So that for me, that interaction with that first group of students who I wish I could go back and say thank you to, because they really put me in my place. But it really just changed the game on how I approach students now. Like, I'm respect, like, to the smallest things, Casey, of like, I could be, let's say I called a student to my office and I wasn't there. I went to the restroom or something, right? And they were waiting for me. I'm going to apologize. Like, yo, I'm so sorry that you had to wait for me. Even though I called them out, even though I just went to the restroom break, like little things like that. Oh, I'm sorry that I forgot to see you last week when I was supposed to see you. Like, for me, being able to do that has been huge. And then students, as you mentioned earlier, like, they love and appreciate being around me because I'm treating them like the human beings that they are, but more importantly, because we're talking about teenagers, like the adults that they are ultimately going to be.
Yeah. So. I love that. And I love, and really what I'm hearing woven in too is modeling personal responsibility too.
Yeah.
Inside of that. So in the, you know, the positive discipline book, the main book, Jane Nelson writes about, you know, this shift into a different way of parenting. And puts it in this framework of, you know, in the 50s, it was dad went to work and dad, you know, the boss said jump and the dad jumped and then came home and, you know, mom listened to dad say jump and mom jumped. And that, like, that was modeled and that was the framework that held this vertical top-down approach together. And then as the 60s and 70s were, you know, showed up and women's rights movement and the questions of, you know, wait a minute, I can be empowered and I can, you know, I can ask to be treated better. Actually, I'm going to demand to be treated better. And the civil rights movement, like everything that showed up in the 60s and the 70s really, you know, shook up that model. And so it makes sense that the kids are now like, wait a minute, why do you get to be a dick? You know, like, hold up, you know? And I love the hearing about that first group of kids too, because I'm imagining that were also a group of kids that had a long history of adults in their life letting them down and not showing up. And, you know, and so it was like, oh, here he comes. Here comes another adult. Right. And so for you to really take the feedback and grow and pivot and try something different is telling, you know, about who you are and what a gift for them to see something different. And, you know, in positive discipline, because that's my background, we talk about mutual respect as, and it showed up in your share. I'm going to respect myself and the situation, and I'm going to respect the person in front of me, the human in front of me. And it's also fits inside of this being kind and firm. Right. Yeah. And some people kind of misunderstand kind, and it's like, oh, you have to be nice all the time. No, that's not what it is. Be real, but connect. Like, like that example of somebody showing up and being what can feel like getting that energetic hit of like, oof, you've got, you know, instead of like, how dare you talk to me like that?
Yeah.
We can shift into, oh, I felt that little dagger. And so that's an indicator. What's going on with you? You know, what's going on with you? Where can we? And I think that is so, it's so simple and so profound and so challenging for parents, right? To let go of that. Like, I can't let them treat me a certain way. So what do you hear? Like, what do you, what comes up for you with parents and families around this concept of respect and helping them shift their mindset?
I just, because I feel like the new school way of parenting, where Kaylee Kukla, I was on her podcast and we were talking about the old school, new school way. And she brought up a point that really has resonated with me. And I always make sure to credit her on this. She said the old school way was heavy on the responsibility being on the child and not as much on the parent. Like the child needs to show up and do well in school, behave, do everything right, stay out of trouble, right? Like that's the responsibility that we put on a child in the old school way model. The new school model says, no, I need to put the onus back on me as a parent to show up in a certain way that I allow my child to have space to grow and understand and learn and go through the process of growing. And to even further hit that point home, like for me, as parents, because we have gone through the game of Monopoly, we know how to play it. Some of us have won the game, some of us have lost. But the reality is we know how to play Monopoly. And what we're trying to do with our children, our teenagers, children, whoever, we're trying to show them, hey, this is how you get to Park Place. And this is how you get to this part of the game. And this is how you avoid jail. And it's like, all the kids want to do is play for themselves. And so as parents, our role in helping our kid play Monopoly is just giving them the instructions and say, okay, here's the instructions, go play it. We're trying to say, oh, I gave you the instructions, but here's some other things that I want to give you. And we're trying to control the situation.
Right.
And kids at the end of the day, students, teenagers, all they ultimately want is for the opportunity to live their lives how they want to live it. Yeah. And I know that sounds like, the way that I'm trying to break it down is like, we've lived our lives and we're trying, because we lived our lives, we're trying so hard to help them live theirs. And the reality is, just like you've lived your life, let them live theirs with you alongside, with you guiding them, with you pushing, you know, like helping them along the way. But in the same thing with the respect model, it's like, we have been taught what respect was in some form or fashion. But at the end of the day, when I think of families, when I think of trying to adapt to a new way of being with our kiddos, it's about, what does respect look like for you? How do you show up with respect outside of your relationship with your child? Because I always challenge parents on this. It's like, look, every relationship you cultivate relationships with your friends, you cultivate relationships with significant others, you cultivate relationships with your coworkers, your bosses. Everybody gets the benefit of being able to cultivate that relationship except for the child. You don't want, for whatever reason, to cultivate that relationship and do the things that will make that relationship better. And for me, respect, it starts with respect. It starts with, how do I respect my child and their boundaries and the different things that are there for them? And how do I want them to show up in the world and be able to respect others when I in my home have established that I don't even want to respect their boundaries and the different things that are happening for them? So my son, who's now 5, will be 6 in June. he recently, it's been a couple months now, so thankfully I've been on the right track with him. But one day I got a little frustrated and I think might have been yelling or got a little loud with him. And he just stopped me and he was like, "If you keep talking rude to me, I'm going to talk rude to you back." And I was like, "You know what? You're right, buddy." Let me clear my
tone. Thanks for putting up the mirror,
right,
babe.
I apologize for talking to you that way.
Yeah.
And I know old school parents are like, I'll never. And it's just like, he's right. Like,
yeah.
Outside of my home, is that going to be the expectations that just because I'm the adult, I'm going to talk to my kid any type of way or talk to a kid any type of way? No, like we want to mirror in our homes what we hope and want for them to have outside of the home. And that is modeling and being respectful. And I think when we think of the old school, new school model, it's just like, I'm going to force you to be this way. And I think the new school is like, no, I want you to just be that naturally.
Yeah. Okay, so most of you know that I have a graduating senior, and I was really struggling to think about something special to commemorate this milestone and really just land how proud I am of him and how excited I am for this time of his life and for everything that's unfolding. Enter Songfinch. You may have heard of them before. Songfinch is an innovative service that lets you create an original radio quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's totally unique, personal, and it lasts forever. Songfinch walked me through a simple process to create my original song for Ian. I told them who the song was for, what style I wanted, and shared some personal details about my boy and our relationship. And then I chose the musician to write, record, and produce the song. You get the final results in 4 to 7 days. I cannot wait to surprise Ian with this. I know it's going to be really, really memorable. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/joyful and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming to your original song for free, which is a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/joyful. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/joyful. You've been hearing me talk a lot about Factor here on the podcast. They are one of our sponsors, and I am here to say they are also one of the easiest ways to meet your health goals if you're on that kind of kick. I have been on that kind of kick. I turned 50 in September, and knowing that big things are ahead, it was important to me to take my health and how my body was feeling seriously. And it's not just about how I move my body, it's also what and how much I'm putting in my body. Factor is key. They're never frozen, ready to eat meals, take the whole meal prep, meal planning to the next level. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular ones like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or vegan and veggie options. I recently fell in love with the spicy peanut grilled chicken with quinoa and sweet potatoes meal. Oh my gosh, yes, please. Also, you'll discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day. Head to factormeals.com/joyful50 and use the code joyful50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code joyful50 at factormeals.com/joyful50 for that 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. And I wonder too, like, there's a worthiness, like worthiness is coming up for me too, and releasing that responsibility. Cause when it's an exchange, when it's a transaction, right? I'll respect you if you respect me.
Exactly.
Right. Then like, I don't know. And I'm just kind of like following this little thread when we can do our best because we're imperfect, everyone.
Yes.
Okay. We're imperfect.
Yes.
So we're going to screw it up and get emotional and be triggered. All those things are human nature, right. And we have tools to navigate that and clean things up.
Mm-hmm.
But when we can sit inside of, I'm going to respect the person in front of me, regardless.
Yeah.
There is also this intrinsic, like, you, child, human, are worthy of that. Mm-hmm. Like, you're worthy of dignity and respect, period. End of sentence, mm-hmm. right? You don't have to earn your worthiness. You don't have to earn dignity. It is a human, like, it's what you get. And so what happens to those kids as they walk out the door?
Exactly.
You know, we're not talking about entitlement. We're not talking about spoiling them and giving them everything we want. We're talking about your worthiness and dignity is intrinsic and alive and a part of who you are. And when we can walk out the door with that intact, I mean, that's it, right?
Yeah. I'm huge on how we treat our child now, how it translates 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. And to your exact point, like, if we establish a way of being in our home where our child has to earn our love and earn our respect and earn our trust, how will they show up in relationships with others? Do they feel like they need to do certain things or be performative to earn the trust and love and respect of their significant other or friendships that they're in, or maybe even other adults? Here's the biggest thing that I see in terms of, like, that top-down way of looking at respect. The biggest issue I see is I run into a lot of students that are failing classes. And whatever your relationship to school is, I kind of am like, it's a necessary evil. That's kind of where I'm at. But because I work at schools, that's just kind of the nature of the conversations that I have. And so a lot of the students are failing. And depending on the situation, I can understand why.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, the goal is to try to get them to graduate, try to get them to move on and really start to live their lives according to how they want to. But we talk about, you know, them failing and having multiple F's. And I always ask them, like, hey, have you talked to your teacher? Mm-hmm. And most of them say no. And I know you're probably out there like, well, I don't think talk to the teacher. It doesn't make sense. And it's like, well, I mean, if I'm at home and the adults in my life, you know, say stuff like, children should be seen and not heard, and they don't give you that level of respect where we're having even conversations and it's always a top-down conversation, no child is going to be confident enough to go to other adults outside of the home.
Yeah, that's they're the making decisions by from you.
Yes.
They're deciding what all adults must be like.
Exactly.
And staying safe, really.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're like, I don't want to get yelled at. I don't want to be judged. I don't want to do all this things that typically happens at home. Right. And so I have to, like, kind of work through this with these students. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, yeah, the teachers are here to help you. They're here to guide you. And even if they don't, right, like, we can have a conversation around that and maybe we can get another adult involved to try to alleviate the situation. But, like, it's not baffling because I just know how the punitive old school way of parenting has created this monster in terms of them not feeling confident to talk to other adults, specifically teachers.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's teachers who have been raised a certain way that...
Oh, there's plenty.
Oh, have shown that they are much like the parents that these kids are dealing with. So it's like, I don't even want to talk because that looks like what I deal with at home.
Right.
And so for me, at the end of the day, how we treat our child, what we establish at home is the basis for what they're going to get or how it looks outside of the home, but more importantly, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, beyond. And so the mutual respect and just all the things that I feel like the new school wave of parenting, based off of not like, oh, we want to treat kids better. It's like, no, the science, the research, all the things say like, yo, we got to get away from this.
We're not just making this shit up, people.
Right. And even better, like, what's amazing about my journey in this parenting space is, like, you know, I have degrees and, you know, I've learned some things, but it's just like, for me, really looking at my students, like, I've started working with students before I really started to, like, read books on parenting and trauma and all these different things. And what's crazy is, like, I've worked with the students and I started reading stuff and I'm having aha moments in my readings because it's like, oh my gosh, I see it now. I'm starting to put the pieces to the puzzles together. Like, I can imagine if I would have read stuff and then started working with students, I wonder how that would have been. But it's like, I'm working with students, I'm seeing exactly what these books, what the research, what everything is saying. And it's pretty impactful. And it is very important for us to at least have a conversation around changing the way we parent. Because I find myself, even in conversations yesterday with students, I find myself like, parents, like, I don't have hair. I'm bald headed. If y'all don't see me, like, I would pull it out if I had hair, because
yeah,
there's some frustrating things that I hear about parents and what they're doing. And for me, it's simple things that parents can change. Simple.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like, I'm hearing, yeah, but what I have heard and what I imagine mm-hmm. might be showing up of like, but yeah, we live in a top-down society and school is a top-down system.
It
and
is.
You go to work and you have to perform and you have to earn accolades.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you agree with me. Yes. And that's not how, like, a kid that shows up inside of those systems with that intrinsic sense of worthiness and dignity is going to be able to navigate and hopefully be on board with dismantling some of those systems that, you know, and I've mentioned this before in the podcast, I had a dad one time in a class say, okay, but when my kid's in front of a judge, the judge isn't going to be like, tell me how you feel and how can we problem solve? And I said, correct. The goal here is to raise your kids in a way that increases the likely or decreases the likelihood that they're not standing in front of a judge.
Right.
Like, how about that? How about instead of being, you know, judge, jury, punisher in the household, we develop that intrinsic sense of dignity, respect, worth, so that when they make their way out into the imperfect world, they're doing it with their shoulders back and their head held high, and they're able to advocate for themselves in a way that isn't like inappropriately confrontational or, you know, because I think about students, I think about teens, the hurt of the disrespect that they're experiencing in the home shows up as defiance. Right? Shows up. And in that process, like, I'm thinking about your students who are failing, like, and kids that are really struggling in school, and their disconnect around, this is actually for you. This isn't for me. This isn't for the teacher. But they're in this reactive, like, screw you, or I'm not worthy enough to be able, you know, this isn't for me. And to be able to help them change that narrative to, how can I use this to create the life that I want? You know, I think that requires a certain level of, I'm worthy of creating the life that I want, which can be like, I don't know, stepped back into how am I treated at with the primary adults in my life? And I will also say, you are, for those kids, you might be, even without the parental support, DJ, and you know this because of your experience and history, all it takes is one adult, one healthy adult.
It does.
To let a kid know that they matter deeply and to show them something different. So, it fires me up.
Oh, it does. I'm in. And I want to go back to a point when you're talking about the dad, and I'm sure you've talked about this ad nauseum. Like, and that, when we're looking at situations like that with our kids, like, oh, what's going to happen when they're in front of the judge, or what's going to happen with this and that? It's like, that's fear based parenting. And for me, I have decided early on, even in my connection, because I'm a Black man in America who's raising a Black son. Like, there's a lot of fears attached to that. And I just have
decided. Well-founded. Yeah.
But I just was like, you know what? Like, I can't operate in that. I have to operate in loving on my son and providing a safe space for him. And if you know anything about my platform, what I deem safe for our children at home is beyond safe physical harm. Like, we're talking safe from your words, your yelling, safe to make mistakes and not be a huge deal, safe to be themselves, safe to call you out on your stuff when you're doing wrong. Like, that's what I mean by safe. Like, being able to have that safe space for my son, we've learned, me and my wife, of like, whoa, like, how he shows up in the world outside of this home is amazing. Like, we rarely get any, you know, callbacks from his teacher and any other spaces that he inhabits. And he comes home and he's free as a bird and yelling and snapping back at us and all types of things. But we know that that is kind of, he feels safe to be able to call us out. He feels safe to talk a certain way. And, you know, we got to say, hey, okay, come on. Like, this is how you do it correctly, right? We're able to have that conversation. But, like, being able to be safe and not operate in a fear-based Like, I don't want to think of a scenario where my son has to be in front of a judge. No, we're not even thinking that. Like, I don't want to think that.
Right.
So yeah, being able to just operate from like, what do I ultimately want with my kid? Mm-hmm. Like throwing the society out, like it's indicative of what has been established in society for all these years. And that is like, we're thinking of parenting, like, how do I make my son be a part of the world? And I think for us, as in this new wave of parenting, we're like, I don't even like the world as it is.
Yeah.
So how do I make them be of it?
Yeah.
But not in it, or in it and not of it, or whatever I'm trying to say. Well, basically what I'm trying to say is I want him to be, and hopefully him being will either shift the world or he's able to navigate the world in his own little way.
Yeah. And I hear too, like, instead of how do we get our kids to fit the world, how do we just support the full development of the human that they are, because that's the human that steps into the world and looks around and says, whoa, you know, there's something to be done here. I did a show a couple weeks ago, a solo show around holding the container. Or maybe it hasn't come out yet. I'm getting ahead on my solo shows. And now I'm like, what did I say? When did I say it? So like holding the container. So the home is where your kid, my kids get to kind of stretch into some different things. And we get to, as the space holders, you know, be with that while also, you know, because there's the modeling of, I'm going to respect you because you're a human. And then there's the, hey, you know, yesterday when you came in, and I'm sure you probably do this with the teens that you work with, you know, you were full of fire because of that exchange that you had. And I'm so glad that we got to process that out. And another way to come in and let me know that you need something like that could look like, could sound like. So it's not, and I want to be really clear with the listeners, it's not just like, take it, right? And then help them process what's under the iceberg. It's also like, hey, let's talk about what it can look like when you have a problem with someone. So I'm modeling it. And I think when we model that, when that's the person we are for them, they're going to be ever more open to also being willing to hear about, here's how this might look a little different for you. And in the side effect is, it's easier to receive, you know, for the other person. Like, it'll be easier for the person that you're talking to, whether it's your teacher or your parent, to receive when you can come in and say, oof, I'm having a really tough day and I just need you to listen versus this is so stupid, right? Like supporting them just in their own process of being in conversation. And I think that's part of this overarching respect piece too.
And to your point, like I had a student yesterday, she was like, oh, I have a question about like coping skills. And I was like, oh, did we? And I looked at my notes and I was like, oh, we worked on them before. And she had lost the sheet. And so no problem, we'll work through it again and maybe take a picture of it. And then this coping skills activity is not just like, oh, let's do a coping skills activity. Like, no, like we're trying to help you establish things that you're going to be using for life because stress never goes away. And so I remember her saying like, yeah, it's just so hard in the moment to like remember to do my coping skills. And I was like, yeah, that's why we practice. That way we get better at being able to manage it. And we get to a point where when those things happen, we're like, oh, okay, let me take my deep breath. Let me do my distraction and let me do whatever. And so, yeah, even in your point, like we got to give them the opportunity and space to practice these situations and know like how to navigate certain things because they're going through life for the first time. And as opposed to like, hey, this is how you do it, kid. And it's like, no, like that's not going to really stick with them, you telling them. What's really going to stick is the processing in their mind through conversation, through dialogue, where they're like, oh, okay, I remember us having this conversation. Okay, boom, let's do it. We're not having enough conversations with our kiddos. I heard somebody say, I don't like when you call them kids. I'm like, okay, that's why I keep stumbling on like children or teenagers. But like,
I'm okay with it, but it does mean goat. I had somebody point that out to me. Can we not call him? I'm like, okay.
It's, I guess the perks of being in this space, I guess.
Yeah.
But like being able to like acknowledge and allow them the space to just kind of like, all right, here's your opportunity to learn. Here's your opportunity to grow. And we can have a conversation around how to do it better next time or move forward next, whatever it is. But like we're treating them like the human beings that are going through life for the first time. And instead of being frustrated that they're not getting something, we're holding grace that you're doing it for the first time. Let's grow. Let's figure this out. Right. You're going to get better as you go on.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. While you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
So we've been talking about kind of like that external space of respect. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about parents that I have worked with or that are telling me about the other parent. So oftentimes it's one parent who's really, you know, on one hand, perhaps the primary parent. Mm-hmm. And then they start doing things differently, following the advice of people like you and me. And then the partner's like, what's happening here? And, you know, it's such a big ask because it's not only like what we say, but it's also, and you had brought up fear, that internal, like, cause it is, I said earlier, like a dagger. It can feel like, you know, how dare you talk to me like that? Plus all the baggage that we've got, you know, energetically around how we've been treated and the declarations. The energetic declarations that we've made about, I'm never going to let someone treat me X, Y, Z for whatever the background story is. And then here's this young person, this unskilled first time around young person with the audacity, right? The audacity to talk back, the audacity to, you know, think they can put me in my place and reframing what's happening and shifting out of that conversation and into, oh, there's something going on with this kid. It requires a lot of really deep inner work and willingness. It can feel like leaping over a chasm. So what would you say are maybe some stepping stones? Like if we were going to build a bridge from that mindset of, I had said no one would treat me like this, and here I am, my own kid, my own kid, right? How do we start to build a bridge towards that place of what you said? Like, hey, it's first time around, right? And their emotions, by the way, everyone, as you've heard me say, ad nauseum, teen brain development is real. It's not an excuse, but it's absolutely a place where we can lean in and have compassion and calm down. But what are some of those stepping stones?
Yeah, and to your point on the teen brain development, like for me, it helps me make sense of behavior and like,
love that.
It helps me to make sense of all things about life. But like in particular, when it comes to my child, when it comes to the teenagers that I work with, I'm able to really like sit with like, okay, something's there for them and it has nothing to do with me. So I think the first step for me is like learning, oh, this is not about me at the end of the day. Whether that's the stuff that I bring into the conversation or whatever stuff they're bringing to the table, like it's not about me.
Right. God, that's so hard.
It is. But also like how I want to show up in the space, either with my kid or otherwise. Like I've had parents tell me like, based off of the conversations that we had in the parenting workshops and the information that was given to them, like they have expressed being better people outside of just being better parents. And so like, because of their work around this parenting stuff, they are showing up differently in their workspace. They're showing up differently in their relationships.
I love that. That's such a great moment, right? When they're like, oh, this isn't just, this isn't parenting. This is like being in relationship with people. Yes. I don't put it on the flyer because no one would come, but yeah.
That's how it goes. So for me, like if you're taking the first step, you're evaluating, like, and I think it's so hard because we're so used to being a certain way. And I know I shared in the last time I was on with you, like me being in foster care and the abuse and trauma that I experienced. If you're familiar with the adverse childhood experience, I literally was just in Texas presenting on the fact that I was an ACE score of 10 and how I was able to navigate that and manage through that. Yeah. So like for me, when I was going through that trauma, it felt like this is what life is. This is how it is. Mm-hmm. Like I accepted that as my norm. And as I got older and started learning more about different things, I didn't really learn about trauma until college, really. It really started to light, like, oh, this is why there's some things happening for me. This is why I show up in relationships the way I do. This is why I rely heavily on alcohol or whatever it might be to drown out my problems, or food in my situation. Like sometimes I'll be sad and I'll just be eating and I'll just have this random sadness overcome. Like we all just chalk that up as a bad day. We all just chalk that up as like, this is what it is. And then the reality is, no, there's something there. There's something present. There's something that has happened that you haven't dealt with, that you've stuffed deep, deep, deep down inside that you got to work through, because nobody deserves to be continually dealing with your stuff that you haven't processed, that you haven't dealt with. And so for me, I'm challenging those out there who are struggling, like, yo, deal with your stuff and really have a real conversation around, did I get everything I needed as a child? I hear so many adults, the old school adults, who are like, you know, my parents, they whooped me, they spanked me, I deserve that, I did this. And it's like, I feel like you are forced to believe that you deserve those things. But I think ultimately, there was a point in your life where you wanted something. You wanted more from your parents. You wanted more connection. You wanted more love. You wanted it. And you just got to a point where you were so disappointed that you just accepted how things are. And I think as adults, I want to give you the power back to not necessarily accept what has been, but just move into a space of like, what do I want for my life now? How do I want to show up for the people that love me and that I love? And how I'm showing up now, does it work for everybody? Does it work for me? Yeah. Does it work for them? I mean, if you can't answer that confidently, then you got to start having a conversation around that healing. And I don't say that you need to talk to a therapist or anything like that. I mean, I encourage it. It's something that I've done.
Yeah. No shame in that game.
But it just being able to say like something's off. Perfect example. I just was bragging about this dad in our current parenting group right now. And he's Spanish speaking. So I hear his story through the translator. And so how he came into the space originally, his wife was parenting a certain way. I think she had went to classes. I'm not really quite sure. But he's a typical dad, works hard. And he one day just kind of acknowledged and recognized that his relationship with his sons wasn't the same that their moms had with the sons. Can't remember exactly how he got to it, but basically he was like, I want to do something about it. And so he saw that the school was offering free parenting workshops. And so that's why he came. And just yesterday he was just talking about how like he can't believe that there are not more parents that come to this because of this awesome information that he's been receiving. Mm-hmm. And so for a dad to really just kind of be in a space where he's acknowledging like, wait, my relationship isn't what I would like it to be. And how can I do something about that? I think there are a lot of people who maybe have that conversation and they don't necessarily put the onus and responsibility on themselves to say, oh, I need to, you know, figure out how to change this. Most parents who are in that situation where the relationship isn't good with their child, they put the onus on the child like, oh, they're a certain way or they're the reason why our relationship isn't good. And it's like, that's no way to be in any other relationship in our lives. If I'm not showing up a certain way to my friend, he's going to call me out on it. And it's going to be rightfully so. And for our kid, when we see that, we're like, it's their fault. It's like, no, what have you done in this situation? You only have control over yourself at the end of the day. So
yeah,
I went a whole way around to really try to encourage people to kind of navigate to this space. But ultimately, it starts with us. It starts with us asking the questions, I just finished a book called Raising Free People, and Akilah, the author, calls it Mad Question Asking. Shout out to Biggie Smalls on that one. But basically, her point is like, I'm asking myself all the questions. Why am I treating my child this way? Why am I showing up this way? And you ask enough questions, you'll start to get the answers.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I'm really hearing in that story, like just the beauty of the willingness. Yeah. I had a conversation with Dr. Shefali recently, which feels very fancy to say out loud. We were talking about identity and when our kids come out to us and it conflicts with perhaps religious beliefs or cultural beliefs. And I loved what she said. She said, you have to love your child more than you love this belief system.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing that from you too. Like, and because I think people get, and I see you in your social media pushing up against the idea of this is how I was parent, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, we get to love our kids or be more attached to what we can create in our relationship with our kids than we are to the conditioning, the experience, the relationship that we had or have with our parents. I was recently in a conversation with somebody that I love a lot about this, and he was really reflecting on not having a model of a deep, close relationship with the father figures in his life. And so, like, it's okay, right? It's not like this death sentence where, well, this is what you got, so this is what you give. Like, we can interrupt it. And that's what I'm really hearing you say. And that willingness, and anybody that's listening, if you have a partner who you think could use this conversation and they're now listening to DJ and I talk, like, it's not about, you know, well, I was going to say it's not about being weak or soft, but there is a softening that can happen. Yeah. And when we can soften and, you know, bringing it back to mutual respect, I feel like respecting the child in front of you, regardless of how they're showing up, there's a softening and there's an opening, right? That's where the opening to relationship can exist. And recognizing, like, of course I feel super pissed right now because they told me to F off. Of course I feel the way that I feel. Yeah. And learning how to manage that, learning how to acknowledge that, breathe it out, reframe. Actually, even before that, being willing to say, oh yeah, I know why I feel this way. And then being willing to say, do I want to step into the dynamic that was so painful for me and repeat it here with my kiddo? I think that willingness to do something different is the first step. So I'm really grateful that you guys are out there doing your work in your community with moms and dads for sure. I know that we're running out of time, but oh my gosh, AJ, I love talking to you. Situational awareness is real too, right? Like, we want our kids to grow and develop situational awareness. And depending on who your kid is and how they present in the world, it can be life or death situational awareness, right? And, you know, as I kind of was thinking about this question, staying in the both and of respecting self and respecting the person in front of me, it serves situational awareness.
Yeah. I read a book once and it was Servant Leadership, and it really kind of changed the game on how I saw leadership. And the motto was like, you be of service to those that you lead. The book started off with a guy who's like stringent, not great relationship with his wife, not great relationship with his children, and really focused on work a lot. And the reason why he went into this particular, I think it was like a retreat or something, the kind of the basis of it. And during a retreat, he kind of learned over time what servant leadership was. And they talk about at the end, him, you know, changing his relationships and changing different dynamics of his life going into the retreat. And it really, what it came down to is like being of service to others. And as parents, I challenge us, like, how do we put ourselves in position to be of service to our children? Because we always operate from the dynamic of, wow, my kid needs to earn my trust. My kid needs to earn my respect. And it's just like, what does it look like for you to serve your child and what they need and how they're showing up? Like, what does that mean? And really having a conversation around that. And if you can lead from that space of service, of knowing like, hey, I'm here to guide you. I'm here to lead you. I've posted about this before. I'm like, so many of us are leading for the first time when it comes to being parents. We are leaders for the first times in our lives, for the most part, when we become parents. And a lot of us don't have skills as good leaders. We are like the leaders that we get upset by in our bosses and our managers and the people that run our country. Right. And it's interesting. Like, I want us to look at that as us going into that space, like with wonder, with curiosity, with care, because we don't know how to lead. We don't know how to parent at the end of the day. Like, we don't know how to effectively do this. So why would we come into it confidently with the ego? You know, like, why would we come in with a big head like, oh, I got this. I never parented before, but I got this and I'm going to do it confidently. And it's like, for me, I've chosen to say, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. So we're going to do this together, buddy. Like, we're going to figure this out together. And that's me being of service. And are there ways where I'm going to lead my son because I know better? Of course. But like, I just was going to post about, like, over the winter break, he was playing his iPad a lot and we didn't really care about screen time. It didn't bother us before. We didn't see it impacting him in the way that we thought. But over break, he was on it a lot and it was changing his mood. And I was starting to see some things and I'm like, so we're like, hey,
welcome to the club, DJ. Glad that you've arrived.
It was kind of like a wait and see approach as opposed to like the parenting space. There's pressure to have every answer to every situation that happens with our kid.
Mm-hmm. As if
me and my wife have just been like, look, let's see what happens. And then we respond accordingly when it happens. And so when this screen time situation came up, we're like, all right, okay, we got to put some limits on this thing. And was he mad and frustrated? Of course. But like over time, we had to help him recognize. Like one day I asked him, I was like, hey, you've been playing your iPad all day. Like, how do you feel right now? And he's like, I think he was like, I just feel like blah. I just feel like whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, he's five, so he probably won't process like what that truly means, but at least we're starting the conversation, right? So for me, like just being open and just really like allowing the space to take shape. It just sounds so like hippie now that I'm like saying it out loud.
But hey, listen, I'm here for it, man. I'm here for it. You're talking to the right girl.
Yeah.
You want to hear the 17-year-old version of that? The 17-year-old version of that is that my son's not a big video gamer. I mean, none of us are really video gamers, so it's just not really a part. I mean, he did had his whole Fortnite period of time, but he likes to be doing things in the world. Like he really likes in real life. But he recently downloaded Call of Duty and he's 17, even though I'm like, oh God, is there a worse? I mean, there are, but I was like, oh, shoot 'em up games, not a fan, but whatever. He's 17 and he spent just like maybe 2 hours playing and he came out of his room. His eyes were so red that I was like, are you stoned? Like, what's happening? And he was like, what do you mean? And I said, well, go look at yourself in the mirror. And it was as if he didn't blink for the entire 2 hours that he was playing the game. So we've been having conversations around like, wow, that's really interesting. And how does it feel when you play it? And what happens to your sense of time? And so it hasn't been this big confrontational situation. It's really been supporting him. Right now I'm on the 17-year-old end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. You're starting at five. Yeah. And it continues as supporting him with his own awareness around how does this affect me and my body and my emotional health? And again, mutual respect, right? I just want to say one last thing before we close off, which is that power of both and. Mm. I think that so often people, specifically teenagers, are put in a position of, I either have to show up respecting myself or respecting the adult in front of me, right? And that, we call it in positive discipline, this dignity double bind. Who wants to let go of their dignity? If respecting you means I'm not respecting myself, that's a shitty place to put kids, right? And so grownups do better, do better, right? It doesn't need to be this putting our kids in this choice of either or. Instead, it's really that both and. Like, what does it look like? What does it sound like? How can we, like you said, practice the both and of respecting myself while respecting the person in front of me? So, oh my God, I could talk to you. DJ, is there anything you want to add before we wrap up?
I just, if you're listening, you made it to this point. I just, as a parent who, you know, even before my son was born, like, I thought I would continue the punitive ways of parenting. And then I started working with students and I was like, whoa, this punitive model ain't working how they say it's working, right?
Right.
And then when my son was born, like, my wife mentioned at the conference about how, like, somebody asked me, like, you know, the healing, like, what was my healing process? And it really expedited when my son was born. Because I started like seeing and acknowledging certain things, and I'm like, whoa, like I got to do something. I got to change. You know, being able to kind of sit with and have a conversation around what that means and what that feels like for you and how you can progress and move forward. For me, like, I don't know if parenting this way is going to help my child, but like, I know that doing parenting in an owl is ultimately not going to serve my child. Mm-hmm. And so I got to think long game. I got to think marathon. I got to think, how are my actions today impacting my child 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now? And I always say this, I don't know if you said it, I might have heard you before, but like, I feel like the best relationships that you can have with your teenager happens before they're teenagers. Mm-hmm. Just because you establish a foundation, you establish a way of being before they're teenagers. Because by the time they become teenagers, it's like, you got to work that much harder to get buy-in, to get trust, to get all of those different things that we're trying to get from our kiddo. And so.
And the teen years can still look like a shit
really
show.
It really can. Yeah.
But doing that work, right? Doing that personal work that DJ and I have been talking about, and like you listeners hear me talk about all the time, matters. Like holding the container, holding the space. Yeah. Beautiful. No doubt. So I asked you this last time, but it's a new day. What does joyful courage mean to you today, DJ?
Today, it means being able to like listen to, you know, this podcast or be in a space with all the different parenting people that I follow. Like, just for me, it's like being open with the reality of how am I challenging the generational patterns that have been established in my home, and how am I like moving forward to change it and create a new pattern? You know, as a person who has been through so much, like, I recognize every day how much of a blessing it is to be where I am, to be able to speak on platforms, to be able to speak at conferences and just kind of share my crazy traumatic story. For those that are out there, like, I don't want you to feel like what we've been able to accomplish in our parenting journey, me and Casey, like, is foreign to you. Like, it's absolutely something that is possible. And for me, like, you having the courage to be able to change something that has been done in your family lineage up until this point will ultimately create that joy that you're looking for in your family dynamic. See what I did there? I'm a poet sometimes.
I know, you really are. I was going to also just mention, as I was listening to you and thinking about you, the lightness, and I don't mean like light as in not a big deal, but the energetic lightness that you bring to this work that you have generated with your story and your history, like, you are like the embodiment of joyful courage. Yeah. And I just wanted to tell you that I thought that.
Thank you. Yeah. I think it's just with all the healing and all of the opportunities to kind of share my story, I'm just lighter, right? I don't carry my story the way that
I used to. Down.
Oh, yeah. I feel so much lighter and I embody that. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Where can people find you and follow your work?
Yes. First and foremost, DJ Inspires Parenting on Instagram. I also have a regular DJ Inspires All Instagram. If you want to follow my current journey, I'm actually preparing to compete in a bodybuilding competition.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to tell my son. He's all about that. And I was just going to say, like, at the start when you were like, should I take out the sports statistician? Yeah. I'm like, well, Ian, that would be what would intrigue my 17-year-old. Like, oh, wait, what?
What does he do?
I'll talk to that guy. So that's at DJ Inspires All.
Yeah, DJ Inspires All.
Okay.
On my Instagram page, I don't remember the number exactly, but I have a parent text community. So you can join the parent text community. And sometimes I'll send you some inspirational, motivational stuff. Or it's just a platform for you to reach out and say, hey, I'm dealing with this. Yeah. Like, help me out, right?
Do you have a website?
DJinspires.com, which I actually just updated. It was like kind of wonky, so I fixed some bugs on it. But anyhow.
It's less wonky. Great. Listeners, as you can come to depend on, we'll have all those links in the show notes. This is so great. Thank you so much for spending time with me. Really good to be with you today again.
Of course, Casey. Always appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening in today. Thank you to my Sproutable partners, as well as Chris Mann and the team at Podshaper for all the support with getting this show out there and making it sound good. Check out our offers for parents with kids of all ages and sign up for our newsletter to stay connected at besproutable.com. Tune back in later this week for our Thursday show, and I'll be back with another interview next Monday. Peace.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.